Should I sip my tea before we start?
Of course. I was just, you know, I just wanted to know. You crazy maniac. I don't understand how you put boiling water in your mouth.
It's not that hot.
That might not be, but you can't tell me that water that comes out straight from the kettle is not hot because you would put that straight in your mouth. I've seen you. You pour from a kettle, or I will pour the tea from the kettle and give it to you, and I know I've just made it, and you drink it like that. So I've got mouth made out of steel. Mostly.
Welcome to Mostly Nothing, the UK's original brain-expanding podcast, discussing the unraveling research and understanding of consciousness, the mind, and psychedelics. Let's delve deep into the vast spectrum of Mostly Nothing with today's episode, where we will continue from where we left off. We will be talking about how LSD went mainstream, the impact it ended up having on society, and where it went wrong, culminating with its illegalization. Towards the end, we delve into some of the modern research involving LSD and what the future holds.
If you enjoy our podcast, please be sure to share and leave a review. Our podcasts are also available on YouTube. Join us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for backstage fun and updates. Please note, all opinions are our own and based on personal experience unless referenced or quoted otherwise. So welcome to part two of our History 101 LSD. So this is part two. If you're joining today's episode, I would advise you to revisit part one, where we kind of begin the timeline of LSD. And this is basically a continuation. We'll be diving right back in from about 1952. And here we go.
So in this episode, we kind of want to go into how it went mainstream to the point where it became a bit of a problem and then it was illegalized. So starting from the beginning, let's look at what happened in early 50s again before we go into early 60s. And back to the early 50s, we need to talk about a very important, let's say, character. It was quite the character. Mr. Alfred Matthew Hubbard.
My G. Hubbard.
Or people just know him as Al Hubbard or Captain Trips or Johnny Appleseed of LSD.
Do you know what? Like, he's one of the guys that I wish, like, I had around me as a friend. Like, I feel like we would have gotten so much.
Yeah.
He's kind of person.
He's a very relevant person behind the, let's say, LSD scene during the 50s, all right? He was born in 1901 in the United States, Kentucky. He was actually born in a very poor family. Even himself said that he only got his first pair of shoes when he was 12 years old. But he was extremely smart, this guy, because he made quite a lot of money by selling a patent of something he invented. He developed some kind of like power generator that kind of worked like a battery. So he was very advanced at the time and he sold the patent for quite a lot of money. And suddenly, boom, he had a lot of money. But then his life was pretty crazy. He went from helping bootleggers contrabanding alcohol into the United States to work with the FDA. Some say he had connections with the CIA. So, you know, he's been in jail, right? Like, quite the guy. And after coming out of jail, he actually became a multimillionaire with his a boat charter business. And around that time, he has his first psychedelic experience, right, with LSD. And that changed him forever. And he believes that was his calling, you know, to go around telling people how important this drug is and how he can somehow change your life for the better. And he had a lot of money and a lot of connections. And please, people, listen, this is a guy that had third grade education and bought a fake PhD, all right? And somehow he even managed to get an FDA approval to do research with LSD, all right? So we can understand how different this person was. But the thing is, he never wanted much attention at all. And a lot of people don't know him at all. Obviously, there are other names that we will see in a bit that are, like, much more famous, let's say, and notable, yeah. But not this guy, really. But the thing is, he did so much. He was basically going around the country, different city every day, giving LSD to people. And he started with really, you know, let's say like social elite. We're talking about like a lot of famous artists, you know, musicians, politicians. And his work was actually super important because he was the first one defining a framework for therapy with LSD. The
safe
way
tripping.
He was the first one talking about setting. So he was really a pioneer, and a lot of scientists then actually used his techniques and his, let's say, protocols to then conduct research. Then again, third grade education, fake PhD. And then we can see, all right, he was going around. So he gave LSD to more than 6,000 people. And his work obviously was very important, but at the same time, we can see how it might have helped it going mainstream. Because all these people, I mean, famous people, musicians, they were like the influencers at the time, right? And if they go out saying they did LSD and they loved it, suddenly it makes it cool. From there, as we know, LSD hit the streets in 1963, and then, yeah.
And at the same time, the Sanders patent on LSD expires.
Around that year, in
1963. So yeah, so it's something that's really important. And so as soon as that happened, the Food and Drug Administration classified LSD as an investigational new drug, which obviously created restrictions on the medical and scientific use. Now, another key figure, I think, is Owsley Sanley. He succeeded in synthesizing LSD in 1965. Originally an audio engineer and chemist, he was known as the first individual to manufacture mass quantities. And like we were speaking earlier, by his own account, between 1965 and 1967, he produced no less than 500 grams of LSD. And also he was known as the first one to kind of hit the purest form of LSD on the streets. And they really do say that the Summer of Love would have not been anything without him.
It was good stuff.
Yes, it was good stuff.
Yeah, that clearly had an impact. And, in the beginning, most LSD users were academics and medical professionals. And even during this time, there was kind of a division in the community, in the scientific community, the people conducting research. On one side, you had people saying that LSD is too powerful and there shouldn't be an immediate widespread to the entire population. And the other side was saying that LSD has the power to revolutionize society and should be made available to all as quickly as possible. The most important people saying this were Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, that later became Ram Dass, after going on a spiritual journey. And these were two young psychologists at Harvard. And they started what was known as the Harvard Psilocybin Project in 1959. And they caused quite the fuss. Their research was actually not well seen at all by their fellow colleagues. And they were conducting investigation while also under the effects of the drugs being studied. So you can see how this is probably not an ideal condition to conduct research.
What was his slogan again?
Tune in, turn on, drop out.
It became
a very famous one, right? Mm. And some of these studies, they were done in poorly controlled conditions, non-random selection of subjects, which mostly were volunteer graduate students. And there was no criteria of selection. They were just basically taking anyone and giving them drugs. Around 1963, Alpert administered psilocybin to undergraduate student off campus. And him and Leary actually end up being fired. The Harvard Psilocybin Project ends. But then what happens is that over the following years, these men become icons of the counterculture.
Yeah, so I guess Timothy was a bit like Marmite, wasn't he? He was either you love him or hate him kind of guy.
You know, he had quite the impact and he became very famous. Yeah.
And I think for those, like you said, who didn't agree with, you know, the way he went about things, I have it quoted here, the only things Leary was serious about were pleasure and their reown. Leary was not a seeker of the truth. He liked women, he liked being center of attention, and he liked to get high.
So some people didn't like him at all.
Some people didn't like him at all. But yeah, he was quite the character. Did you also know that some of his ashes were put out into space? Like he put them in the rocket and put out into space because he wanted his ashes to be on the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's good. You can tell that he had quite the big ego, right?
It's really strange, isn't it?
And
because
that almost goes against what psychedelics kind of do for you, that ego dissolution experience. You know, in his case, it's almost like it inflated his ego even more. And I've read that that can happen, actually.
But I think I think where he was coming from is, you know, he was just the type of character to get excited over things very quickly. And obviously, you know, you experience something like that. And a lot of the times, I think the first thing people think when they experience psychedelic is, oh my God, like I need this and this person to try it, right? Because I think he just got overly excited by it and was like, you know, everyone needs to try this. And I think then, yeah, it started to go down, you know, the wrong route. And I think he just got lost.
He was like the excited teenager in the group.
Yes.
Like, we need to get this out there.
Yes.
And everyone was actually telling him, just relax a little bit. Let's first have a better idea of what this thing does and how it works. Let's do a bit more research. And then we slowly introduce it to people. But he was like, nope. I want everyone tripping on acid.
That's the thing. I don't know if, like, I mean, yeah, I don't know if it came. I don't think personally it came from a bad place. I think he really just wanted everyone to experience what he felt. But unfortunately, he didn't go about it the right way.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. So then in 1966, Life magazine published a front page with, quote unquote, the exploding threat of the mind control drug that got out of control, LSD. And then, yes, in 1966, in the same year, Sanders gave its last tab or whatever of
whatever,
LSD
yeah.
and withdrew all sponsorships related to working with LSD. It's like, I know.
It's crazy because I understand they making it illegal on the streets, but it's a bit shocking how all the research kind of went to shit, basically.
Agreed.
I really see how Timothy had a huge impact and Ram Dass. How they have had a huge impact in making LSD mainstream, which ended up leading people to overuse it and overuse it for recreational purposes, not for therapy. All right. And we can see how that can be a bad thing. But we can also see a lot of ideas associated with the counterculture at the time were actually very progressive ideas. People were protesting against the war, and they say the reason it was made illegal, it had a lot of, I'd say, political motive behind it. A lot of people were, were doing acid and starting to realize that war is a bit stupid. And especially Vietnam War was probably one of the most useless wars of all time. So much like needless killing and suffering, right? You know, at the time, Nixon, US government, they probably didn't like that. And they were also doing protests against racism. You know, they were talking about how we should respect nature a bit more. So you can see how much of this is so current. It's important to this day, right? So in a certain way, yeah, I don't think it took the right path in the way that, ended up being way too overused. But there are positives that came out of it. And that had a huge impact on the following decades and the policies being reformed, let's say.
So, I think as well, that's why I'll never have I can't judge him, I want to say.
Yeah.
I can't judge him.
But I can see how everyone else, the other scientists that didn't agree with him, I can see how they were so much more reasonable.
Agreed. Yeah.
I can really understand the way they were trying to do it. And that's actually the way modern scientists are trying to go about it.
Correct.
With caution. Obviously, there were other things that had a negative influence on the public opinion regarding LSD. And you wanted to tell me something about Charles Mason?
Yeah, the Charles Mason murders. There's like this, I guess, not even a conspiracy, but like this interlinction because he used LSD as a tool to get these, I guess, victims to carry out murders. And these victims were these like hippie girls, like, you know, love, life, flowers, unicorns, girls, and he had literally turned them into cold killers.
Murderers, yeah.
You know, and yeah, I don't know if you knew, but you know that movie we watched, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? It's based on that. I didn't know that.
I knew it had an influence on it. Yeah, I read something about it, but not into that much detail.
But that's the thing, there's not too much information on this, but there was an article, I think it was in the New York Times, talking about that it could have been the CIA who basically created this murderer.
Oh, so you think relating to that project we were talking about in the first episode?
Yeah.
The MK Ultra.
Yeah.
Shit, that's crazy.
So it's all really, really weird, weird stuff. And yeah, and by 1970, 1 in 2 million Americans had abused LSD. So after that, obviously, you know, a bit of quiet, a bit of a gap.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a gap
LSD
in between.
Was seen as the demon. Well, psychedelic drugs was like the demon. It's going to make you go crazy.
And red tape. No one even dared.
Schedule 1 class A drug, that's it.
That was it. So yeah, so you said you're talking about in the 90s, it started to resurface.
So in the 1990s, clinical hallucinogen research very slowly began again.
Yeah, so then in 2005 to 2006-ish, the Johns Hopkins kind of started up their new team, which included, you know, activists, I guess, of psychedelics who were involved in research from in the 60s, one being Bill Richards, who is a clinical psychologist. I read a bit about him, and it's he actually had this wild fantasy where he hopes that one day individuals who look to teach religious studies, for example, to be like a Buddhist, would take psychedelic experiences for like credits in order to then be these teachers. So this is like his like, you know, vision one day. I thought that was quite cool. And he says the ideal treatment includes some kind of mystical transcendence. Yeah. So that all started up again in 2005, 2006.
So then in Europe, there were some other studies happening in recent years. All right. So in Europe, there were 5 novel experimental placebo control studies done in 3 different cities, Basel, London and Zurich, involving a total of 95 normal and healthy subjects. All these studies, this is actually quite recent. And just for people to have an idea, the first modern research findings of studies using LSD were published only in 2014, 2015. So this is very, very recent. We can see there was a huge, huge gap of time. Well, in sum, from all these studies, what they concluded is that within a session, all subjects experienced positive drug effects, but also some negative effects. Profound anxiety or panic was not experienced, and pharmacological sedation was not needed. And what are the main effects of LSD, right? Because, I mean, we've been talking so much about its history, but we really haven't told people like about the possible effects. And the main things these studies state is, a blissful state, audio-visual synesthesia, which is basically like when you can kind of see sounds or you smell colors. That's what they mean with synesthesia. Changes in the meaning of perception and a positive experience of derealization and depersonalization. The studies also report increased feelings of well-being, happiness, openness, trust, and feelings of closeness to others. But there are adverse effects. So it says here that it does cause moderate increase in blood pressure, heart rate, body temperature, pupil size. But they say that between 100 micrograms and 200 micrograms, there wasn't a huge difference in terms of the physiological effect. So that's also curious, because it's like double the dose, but in terms of the impact on your cardiovascular system, it doesn't appear like it makes a huge impact being double the dose.
Yeah,
these cardiovascular effects are actually less pronounced than those of MDMA and other stimulants. But the important bit is, of all these studies done, the more modern ones, there are no zero severe adverse reactions.
Promising stuff.
Yeah, and basically says here, studies in the article I read, it said studies are consistent with the view that LSD is relatively safe when used in medical settings with adequate guidelines and protocols. Basically, they concluded that LSD is physically non-toxic, but there are risks when it's used in unsupervised settings. And they say, well, there's some mid-long-term effects. In comparison to other illicit substances, the use of classic hallucinogens it's actually associated with lower psychological distress, lower suicidal ideation, and lower mental health problems. And it's not an addictive substance leading to compulsive intake or withdrawal symptoms.
which is so important, I think, to look at. You know, I think that's a key factor, because a lot of the, you know, if you're looking for LSD to treat depression, a lot of the things that are, you know, are used to be treating depression have horrible withdrawal effects, horrible. A lot of people who have depression and take antidepressants report on, you know, the antidepressants not helping them, but they would still not stop taking them because of the side effects.
They're addicted.
Addiction, and they know how painful it is.
You know what happened with Jordan Peterson?
Yeah.
He had a huge problem.
A very bad problem.
The withdrawal was horrible, apparently. It's his own personal account, by the way. Yeah. I'm not in just coming up with stuff.
So this is the thing. Imagine people, you know, they're taking these things that are giving them side effects that aren't even helping them, and they're only on them because they're too scared to come off them. And then you have something that, you know, you can take once. And I think it really is incredible. Anyway, but I think we were saying, like, you know, as an ending point, we really do believe that it's just more research needs to be carried out, more research needs to be continued. And it's going in the right track.
And more research done with people that are actually suffering from, you know, anxiety, depression. Because all of this I've been saying, the results were with healthy people. And we do need more trials to actually have more conclusive information about how effective LSD is to treat some of these conditions.
And it's been quite difficult for us because a lot of the stuff we've been looking into has kind of been folding over into other psychedelic research, such as psilocybin, which has a lot of current research in at the moment. And it's all very promising and exciting.
Much more than LSD.
Much more than LSD. I'm personally more excited about psilocybin. I mean, I've never had LSD, but I still think psilocybin, I don't know, for me, it's just something that, I don't know, I'm more excited by it. It's more us.
Natural.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, in a certain way, so is LSD.
But it's more natural.
Yeah.
It would still be here even if Hoffman never had accidentally taken that. There are a lot of figures that we wanted to go into in this episode, but obviously we will keep that till next time.
Yeah, a lot of the people involved in these studies that we are referring, we didn't want to mention them because we want to go back.
Yeah.
To them in more detail in, you know, coming episodes, let's say.
And if you've been listening till the end, I've got these three fun facts, and I want you to let me know which one is your favorite. So let us know on our last post. Yeah. Comment which one of these facts are your favorite, because these are really interesting and fun. And I was like, what? Okay, so the first fun fact of the day is that a group of scientists funded by NASA gave dolphins hallucinogenic drugs, LSD, in an attempt to communicate with the dolphins. Very interesting.
People have interesting ideas.
Interesting.
I mean, waking up one day and thinking, what if we give LSD to dolphins?
Yeah.
I don't, like, and then you go to a guy to get the study approved, and the other guy just goes like, why not?
Yeah, so I mean, if you personally can't tell, obviously they couldn't communicate with the dolphins, but 70% were more vocal, if that interests you at all. Fun fact number two, LSD helped cure a Holocaust survivor's PTSD and also helped him sleep for the first time in 30 years without nightmares. I think that's incredible.
Amen.
I think that's so cool, because nightmares can truly be terrifying. Having them every single day for 30 years? I don't know.
I don't think I could be functional.
No. Mm. No. Fun fact number three.
Well.
Known as Acid King, William Leonard Picard is considered the largest manufacturer of LSD in American history.
All right.
Fun stuff. So thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to review and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Check out our video on YouTube and check us out on Instagram. We're pretty interactive. We like to post stuff. We like to interact. Come and join us there. In the next episode, we will be going into the history timeline of psilocybin. Super pumped for this. So see you on the other side.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. We love you all.
Bye.
We truly do.
Bye.
Bye.